As the world watches and listens in horror, the peaceful pro-democracy demonstration in China comes to a violent and bloody end.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Wolves hiding nearby, whispering, do or die. Around me, you say your last good night while I.
There is another very important phase of warfare. It has as its target not the body, but the mind of the enemy.
The target of psychological warfare is against the enemy's mind.
It is words and ideas.
Ammunition used by Cywar.
Its mission is to influence the thoughts of the enemy soldiers. And at the same time,
is expected and encouraged to study foreign languages and the social sciences such as history, economics, and sociology. He must have a broad and sympathetic understanding of all phases of human experience.
Gripping at my skin, the walls of night close in.
But the use of this force as an integral part of combat has now taken on new form. Are the Cywar soldiers.
We're having a back channel discussion, and we agree, what is liminal? That is liminal. So liminal, so meta, as the cliche goes. So meta, so liminal. But seriously, very liminal, very meta. That's what that is. And this is emblematic of what's going on. So what is going on? And as a, again, just to finish the aside that I mentioned before, on republicbroadcasting.org, you can find the post from 2 days ago now, repost from Twitter, WikiLeaks. Never forget, Kissinger is 99 years old, his 100th birthday, you know, Ted Koppel interviewed him, right, for CBS Sunday Morning. Still trying to be relevant. Been relevant since 1958, basically, or before, actually. And still at it. But you can see on the post from the Twitter WikiLeaks, this little bit, you know, never forget that he actually said that. Kissinger, before the Freedom of Information Act, he said, I used to say at meetings, the illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer. Then there was laughter. But since the Freedom of Information Act, I'm afraid to say things like that. And there's a link, obviously, to WikiLeaks that gives you the full context of the quote. So, For those who doubt this may have occurred, go read the whole memorandum of conversation for yourself. So, yeah, exactly. And this gets right to the heart of kind of where we're headed, I think. So Norman Dodd on tax-exempt foundations is the title of the video of the interview of Norman Dodd by G. Edward Griffin back in 1982. We're going to back it up a little bit, start at the 15-minute mark, and we're going to go through some of the background of what was going on. Speaking of, you know, Renee Wurmser foundations, their power and influence, what these guys at the Reese Committee were doing. This was, I won't explain the Reese Committee. I'll just presume that we all know what the Reese Committee represents. Every American should know about the Reese Committee and what their investigation revealed. That's been the subject of many Road Warrior radio broadcasts. We should all know about the Reese Committee. We should all be at least conversant and familiar, I think, with the Reese Committee. And if we were, things would be markedly different. We wouldn't see the wolf hiding in sheep's clothing as just another sheep, or maybe a shepherd. That's not a wolf, that's a shepherd. I feel like we should be playing Pirates and Emperors today too. I'm not a duck. I'm an anti-duck. Anyway, Norman Dodd gives a little bit of background, and then he gets into his own firsthand recounting of the conversation of, with Horace Rowan Gaither at the Ford Foundation. Again, if we all knew these things, we wouldn't view these institutions as Catherine Casey did, as just wonderful philanthropic organizations that do so much good. Oh my goodness, how can you think such a thing of these organizations? Well, having some background and understanding of what they have said themselves, like what Catherine Casey discovered at the Carnegie Endowment for International So-Called Peace, where they were working for the exact opposite, which again was something that was disclosed by Norman Dodd in the interview with G. Edward Griffin. And when Griffin asked something to the effect of, who knows about this? You know, that it, where is that information? Norman Dodd said it's, you know, buried somewhere, I think, in the basement of the Library of Congress, I believe. But, you know, when Norman Dodd, when G. Edward Griffin said, who knows about this? Dodd said, well, Catherine Casey, me, and you, and that's about it. And I suppose the 250,000 people who have viewed the video and however many other folks have heard the story along the way. But we all should know that story. Anyway, enough about that. Here is the excerpt, and particularly we're concerned with the disclosure by Rowan Gaither to Norman Dodd. So here that goes. Go ahead, please.
The director of research.
What were some of the details, the specifics that you told the committee at that time?
Well, Mr. Griffin, in that report, I specifically, number one, defined what was, to us, what was meant by the phrase un-American. And we defined that in our way as being a determination to effect changes in the country by unconstitutional means. We have plenty of constitutional procedures, assuming that we wish to effect a change in the form of government or that sort of thing. And therefore, any effort in that direction which did not avail itself of the procedures which were authorized by the Constitution could be justifiably called un-American. That was the start of educating them up to that particular point. The next thing was to educate them as to the effect on the country as a whole of the activities of large endowed foundations over the then past 40 years.
What was that effect, sir?
That effect was to orient our educational system over away from support of the principles embodied in the Declaration of Independence and implemented in the Constitution, and educated them over to the idea that the task now was, as a result of the orientation of education, to away from these briefly stated principles and self-evident truths. And that's what had been the effect of the wealth, which constituted the endowments of those foundations that had been in existence over the largest portion of the span of 50 years, and holding them responsible for this change. And what we were able to bring forward was that what we had uncovered was the determination of these large endowed foundations through their trustees to actually get control over the content of American education.
There's quite a bit of publicity given to your conversation with Rowan Gaither. Would you please tell us who he was and what was that conversation you had with him?
Rowan Gaither was at that time president of the Ford Foundation. And Mr. Gaither had sent for me when I found it convenient to be in New York, asked me to call upon him at his office, which I did. And on arrival, after a few amenities, Mr. Gaither said, "Mr. Dodd, we've asked you to come up here today because we thought that possibly, off the record, you would tell us why the Congress is interested in the activities of foundations such as ourselves." And before I could think of how I would reply to that statement, Mr. Gaither then went on voluntarily and stated, he said, "Mr. Dodd, all of us that have a hand in the making of policies here have had experience either with the OSS during the war or the European Economic Administration after the war. We've had experience operating under directives, and these directives emanate and did emanate from the White House. Now we still operate under just such directives. Would you like to know what the substance of these directives is?" And I said, "Yes, Mr. Gaither, I'd like very much to know." Whereupon he made this statement to me, namely, "Mr. Dodd, we are here operate on similar directives, the substance of which is that we shall use our grant-making power so to alter life in the United States that it can be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union." Well, parenthetically, Mr. Griffin, I nearly fell off the chair. I, of course, it didn't, but my response to Mr. Gaither then was, "Well, Mr. Gaither, I can now answer your first question. You forced the Congress of the United States to spend $150,000 to find out what you just told me. So why don't you..." I said, "Of course, legally, you're entitled to make grants for this purpose. But I don't think you're entitled to withhold that information from the people of the country to whom you're indebted for your tax exemption. So why don't you tell the people of the country, that's what you told me? And his answer was, we would not think of doing any such thing. So then I said, well, Mr. Gaither, obviously, you forced the Congress to spend this money in order to find out what you've just told me.
Mr. Dodd, you have spoken before about some interesting things that were discovered by Catherine Casey at the Carnegie Endowment. Can you tell us that story, please?
Yes, I'm glad to, Mr. Griffin. This experience that you have just referred to came about in response to a letter which I had written to the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, asking certain questions and gathering certain information. And on the arrival of that letter, Dr. Johnson, who was then president of the Carnegie Endowment, telephoned me and said, did I ever come up to New York? And I said, yes, I did, more or less each weekend. And he said, well, when you're next here, will you drop in and see us? Which I did. And again, on arrival at the office of the endowment, I found myself in the presence of Dr. Joseph Johnson, the president, who was a successor to Alger Hiss, two vice presidents, and their own counsel, a partner in the firm of Sullivan and Cromwell. And Dr. Johnson said, after, again, amenities, Mr. Dodd, we have your letter. We can answer all those questions, but it'd be a great deal of trouble. And we have a counter-suggestion. And our counter-suggestion is that if you can spare a member of your staff for 2 weeks and send that member up to New York, we will give to that member a room in the library and the minute books of this foundation since its inception. And we think that whatever you want to find out or the Congress wants to find out will be obvious from those minutes. Well, my first reaction was they lost their mind. I had a pretty good idea of what those minutes would contain, but I realized that Dr. Johnson had only been in office 2 years, and the vice presidents were relatively young men, and counsel seemed to be also a young man, and I guessed that probably they'd never read the minutes themselves. And so I said I had somebody, I would take it. I would accept their offer, and I went back to Washington, and I selected the member of my staff who was on my staff, having been a practicing attorney in Washington, but she was on my staff to see to it that I didn't break any congressional procedures or rules. In addition to which, she was unsympathetic to the purpose of the investigation. She was level-headed and a very reasonably brilliant, capable lady. And her attitude toward the investigation was, what could possibly be wrong with foundations? They do so much good. Well, in the face of that sincere conviction of Catherine's, I went out of my way not to prejudice her in any way. But I did explain to her that she couldn't possibly cover 50 years of handwritten minutes in 2 weeks. So she would have to do what we call spot reading, and I blocked out certain periods of time to concentrate on. And off she went to New York. She came back at the end of 2 weeks with the following in the way of on dictaphone belts. We are now at the year 1908, which was the year that the Carnegie began operations. And in that year, the trustees, meeting for the first time, raise a specific question, which they discuss throughout the balance of the year in a very learned fashion. And the question is there any means known more effective than war, assuming you wish to alter the life of an entire people. And they conclude that no more effective means than war to that end is known to humanity. So then in 1909 they raise the second question and discuss it, namely, how do we involve the United States in a war? Well, I doubt at that time if there was any subject more removed from the thinking of most of the people of this country than its involvement in a war. There were intermittent shows in the Balkans, but I doubt very much if many people even knew where the Balkans was. Then finally, they answer that question as follows. We must control the State Department. And then that very naturally raises the question of how do we do that? And they answer it by saying, we must take over and control the diplomatic machinery of this country. And finally, they resolve to aim at that as an objective. Then time passes, and we are eventually in a war, which would have been World War I. And at that time, they record on their minutes a shocking report in which they dispatched to President Wilson a telegram cautioning him to see that the war does not end too quickly. And finally, of course, we are, the war is over. At that time, their interest shifts over to preventing what they call a reversion of life in the United States to what it was prior to 1914 when World War I broke out. And they arrive at that point, they come to the conclusion that to prevent a reversion, we must control education in the United States. And they realize that that's a pretty big task. So it's to them, it is too big for them alone, so they approach the Rockefeller Foundation with the suggestion that that portion of education which is could be considered domestic be handled by the Rockefeller Foundation, and that portion which is international should be handled by the endowment. And they then decide that the key to the success of these two operations lay in an alteration of the teaching of American history. So they approach four of the then most prominent teachers of American history in the country, people like Charles and Mary Byrd, and their suggestion to them is, will they alter the manner in which they present this subject, and they get turned down flat. So they then decide that it is necessary for them to do, as they say, build our own stable of historians. And then they approach the Guggenheim Foundation, which specializes in fellowships, and say, when we find young men in the process of studying for doctorates in the field of American history, and we feel that they are the right caliber, will you grant them fellowships on our say-so? And the answer is yes. So under that condition, eventually they assemble 20. And they take this 20 potential teachers of American history to London. And there they're briefed into what is expected of them when, as and if, they secure appointments in keeping with the doctorates they will have earned. And that that group of 20 historians ultimately becomes the nucleus of the American Historical Association. And then toward the end of the 1920s, the endowment grants to the American Historical Association $400,000 for a study of our history in a manner which points to what can this country be, can it look forward to in the future. And that culminates in a 7-volume study, the last volume of which is, of course, in essence, a summary of the contents of the other 6. And the essence of the last volume is the future of this country belongs to collectivism administered with characteristic American efficiency. That's the story that ultimately grew out of, and of course was what could have been presented by the members of this congressional committee to the Congress as a whole for just exactly what it said. They never got to that point.
This is the story that emerged from the minutes.
Put a pin in it there. Hopefully you understand why we play the extended excerpt like we have in the past. That, again, is information that should be known to every American. And most people, I dare say, have never heard of Norman Dodd or the Reese Committee or any of what he just outlined there. But those forces are still being brought to bear today. So, you know, to circle back around and with Kissinger's remarks from 1975 in mind, before the Freedom of Information Act, I used to say at meetings, the illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer. Ha ha ha. And the undeniable reality of what Norman Dodd disclosed specifically, or particularly in this case, the comfortable merger of the United States and Soviet Union, you know, again, if you want to make a sword that is unbreakable, you take two different metals, one hard, one soft. Just generally speaking, you fold them together, hammer them in the fire, keep folding and hammering, do that 1,000 times, and you have the perfect unbreakable sword. And that is what is being done in a different sort of context. And so across the pond, the balkanizing impulse has been being perfected, in the process of being perfected. And so I just want to give you some of the text from the slides. Again, this is from the Russia and the Color Revolution, a Russian military view of a world destabilized by the U.S. and the West. Key briefs. This is the summary from the full report back in 2014 by Anthony Cordesman at CSIS in particular. And again, why is this information public domain? Why was the presentation in English? Is another interesting question. You have a bunch of Russian military and diplomatic folks gathered, but the presentation is in English? Really? And, you know, There's like a veneer of, well, we're not good with English, but it's perfect English. It's a really weird thing. That's a whole different discussion. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Ciroc grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself, don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches when you learn you must face them alone. Please remember, I still want you. And in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Welcome back. All right, let me give you the text from some of these slides so you can understand what I'm talking about. I'm not just, sounding like I'm making things up or something. So from this presentation, again, this is, you can find this on CSIS. The links are from the CSIS analysis by Anthony Cordesman, Anthony H. Cordesman, Emeritus Chair in Strategy. You know, one of those old school bad guys who, I don't know, says crazy things, like Patrick Claussen, for example. So this was published back in 2014, May 28, 2014, Russia and the Color Revolution. And there are two available downloads featured at the top of the post, which is subtitled A Russian Military View of a World Destabilized by the U.S. and the West. Funny how Mark Galeotti says that the Gerasimov Doctrine doesn't exist. It was never meant to mean anything, and it doesn't. It's time to move past it, when guys like Anthony Cordesman and, for that matter, Charles K. Bartles and others seem to disagree. That's funny. How is that? Anyway, A Russian Military View of a World Destabilized by the U.S. and the West. That's kind of the kernel there. That's the nugget. However, it's bigger than that, obviously. It's what Norman Dodd said. It's what Major Racy Jordan's diaries disclosed. It's what Anthony Sutton wrote about in the three-volume series Western Technology and Soviet Development, for example, and on and on. You know, national suicide, military aid to the Soviet Union, this kind of stuff. Why was that happening? There's an interesting post. There are a few of them, actually. Interesting posts. There's a blog titled RedefiningGod.com. There's a post over there, Understanding the NWO Strategy. That's a good one to read if you want to understand this better. There's a companion to that, a couple of companions. The Rockefeller Plan for the BRICS, New World Order in Their Own Words, drawing first from the Rockefeller Panel Reports, and the book titled Prospect for America, The Rockefeller Panel Reports, produced in 1956, Rockefeller Brothers Fund product, and part of the Special Studies Project, which was directed by none other than Heinz Alfred Kissinger himself. Interesting stuff. Not to belabor this and get sidetracked again, but the post concludes with some troll, you know, this post concludes with this. In response to this comment from a suspected troll, how do you know that Putin isn't telling Kissinger, buddy, your days are numbered? I looked up an old New York Times article I ran across a while ago, and it's from 2012, titled Putin Welcomes Kissinger, Old Friends to Talk Shop. The two men are old friends who have met eight or ten times over the years, once dining at Mr. Kissinger's home in New York. So this post concludes, so while the front page news has blaring headlines about the supposed conflict between West and East, you'll find the truth a little deeper in the paper, that all these political types work for the same bosses and are actually buddies behind the scenes. Don't be distracted by the public puppet theater. So from the slides, tell me if any of this is ringing a bell. Any of this sound familiar? And I'm drawing from the 52-page summary or key briefs. Russia and the Color Revolution, A Russian Military View of a World Destabilized by the West, by the U.S. and the West, Key Briefs, 52-page summary by Anthony H. Cordesman, published May 28, 2014. So I'm going to refer to the pages as pages or slides interchangeably. So from beginning on page or slide 14 of 52, adaptive approach to the use of military force. Have we talked about AUMF in America, especially in the post-9/11 era? So you look at that slide, concealed use of military force. Across the top, there are four images with four expressions, and there's a diagram of this. Military training of rebels by foreign instructors. Sounds like Brzezinski, the ghost of Brzezinski. Supply of weapons and resources to the anti-government forces. application of SOF and private military companies, special operations forces, and military companies, reinforcement of opposition units with foreign fighters, and then the diagram points to, has the resistance of the opposition of the opposing side been suppressed? Has the resistance of the opposing side been suppressed? If the answer is no, search for creation of pretext for a military operation, protection of civilians and foreign citizens, or accusing a conflicting party of using weapons of mass destruction. And that obviously is the pretext that leads to military operation. Back to the question, you know, change the political regime. And so this is a loop. So if the question, has the resistance of the opposing side been suppressed, the answer is yes, then change the political regime. So this is a rinse and repeat loop. From page or slide 16 of 52, assessment of adaptive approach to use of military force. And under the adaptive approach to the use of military force, you have it provides for maintaining positive image in the international community. It avoids substantial costs for military operations. It gives an opportunity to prevent numerous casualties. And then below all of those three, there is the question, what is the influence of such an approach on the international security? And I have highlighted influence, emphasis added, influence. Who wants to influence and persuade? From 20 of 52, page slide 20 of 52, consequences for international security of implementing new approaches to use of military force. Color revolutions, which lead to, there are arrows below each one of these. So, color revolutions lead to military support to anti-government forces. Open military intervention leads to increase in uncontrolled force, for example, mercenarism, terrorism, extremism, trans-border crime, which leads to an expanded range of threats to international security. Now, who would want to do something like that? From 28 of 52, Objective Laws of Color Revolutions is the title of the slide. Those nations are more exposed to destructive centrifugal forces, that's highlighted, different colored text, which lack strong power, information link between the government and the people, where corruption is flourishing and state interests are substituted by personal benefit. We have a guy in the White House right now, and I just, maybe I'm, I don't know, maybe I don't understand how things work, or maybe I'm really missing something, but we play that clip from time to time. The 2018 conversation, Biden and CFR President Richard N. Haass, and, you know, Biden talking about the shakedown, the Chicago-style mafia shakedown in Ukraine. So I told him, you know, if you don't get that guy out, you're not getting $1 billion. And he said to me, you're not the president. I said, you know what, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. So you're not getting $1 billion. I'm leaving here in about 6 hours. I looked at my watch and I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutors, you know, who's looking into things he's not supposed to look into, you know what I'm talking about. Prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a gun. He got fired and they put in place somebody who was solid at the time. Can you believe the vice president of the United States said those words? People laughed, and that guy is back in the White House again, this time as the president. Did we get the government we deserve? I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I don't understand something, but that is criminal. And that he's back in the White House and not wearing orange jammies somewhere or worse is insane to me. That is liminal. So, 28, those nations are more exposed to destructive centrifugal forces which lack strong power information link between the government and the people, where corruption is flourishing and state interests are substituted by personal benefit. State interests are substituted by personal benefit. What is going on in Ukraine right now? Is there basically an auction in Ukraine for the highest bidder for personal benefit? Even though we hear the rhetoric about other things. So, key factors for successful countering color revolutions, continuing in the slide. Participation in international organizations. Aha, see? So the esoteric message is the black hand points to the white hand, or the black finger points to the white hand. The exoteric message is our only hope, Obi-Wan, is that we all become good communitarian serfs. Two more bullet points on that slide. Establishing joint defense and security structures and effective functioning of Russia-Belarus region military group and joint regional air defense system. See, when elephants fight, the grass struggles. All we can do is keep building these interlocking organizations that eventually will be themselves welded together. That's what Richard N. Gardner, the other CFR guy, wrote in The Hard Road to World Order in 1974. It will, to quote William James, it will look like a great booming, buzzing confusion, but don't worry, eventually we'll weld it all together. So, next slide, 29. Incitement of color revolutions. Color revolutions, and there are images that you should see that sort of explain as well, featuring of certain groups. Color revolutions are prepared from outside, but their aftermath is disastrous both for state victims and globally. Who would want disasters? Why would somebody want that? 33 of 52, collapse of international military activity. Control system, and there are graphics with three statements. Gray zones on the map of Europe, activity of private military companies featuring prominently Academy, Z, Blackwater, and last but not least, functioning of militant training bases. Who's been doing that for decades? 34. Aftermath of color revolutions. Use of military force during color revolutions results in humanitarian disasters, fostering human trafficking, cross-border criminality, and drug cartel activities. Have you been hearing about that on, you know, Fox News, Newsmax, even CNN and other places? 35 of 52. Information confrontation during color revolutions. Is this, again, is any of this ringing a bell? During color revolutions, information confrontation rises to unprecedented levels, provoking nationalism and xenophobia. There are references to Nazism in Europe, 1939 to 1945, and neo-Nazism in contemporary Europe. But you know what? One person's Nazi is another person's freedom fighter. Because there are pirates and emperors, but they're really the same thing. Consequences of information confrontation, slide 36 of 52. On a global scale, information confrontation during color revolution leads to military and political confrontation. Again, is any of this ringing a bell? Are we seeing any of this? I mean, how many, if we go down a list of 100 items and we check every box, or maybe we check 75 out of 100 boxes, do we think it's a coincidence? On a global scale, confrontation during color revolution leads to military and political confrontation. Escalation of information confrontation leads to a significant increase in the military budget. Activation of defense industry and strengthening of power method for problem solving as priority vector of foreign policy, which gets back to my point about ISR data being fed into the OODA loop of, you know, the Skinner box, essentially, cybernetic totalist feedback loop. And that's the only way we can combat this threat, or so we're told. Slide 39. Aftermath of color revolutions. Color revolutions aftermath carries a significant destructive power to the existing global and regional military security structure. Who would want to do that? It may generate a number of threats, plunging the world into a new round of military confrontation in the form of the Cold War. Slide 40. Color revolutions prevention. How do we prevent this from happening? Are we skipping the break? Oh, okay. We're skipping the break. All right. Okay. How do we prevent this from happening? World community assistance to the actions of legal government. Well, who decides what's legal, I think, is kind of the first question. But, again, world community assistance to the actions of legal government. There is that quote, speaking of Kissinger, that's been floated for decades. You know, 1992, Avion France, I believe, you know, the American people would never allow internet, you know, the white helmets, the blue helmets now, but the time is coming when they'll clamor for it. Please send the white helmets, send the black helmets. So again, the esoteric message, black finger, black hand, or black finger pointing to white hand, exoteric message, our only hope is that we all become good communitarian serfs. And, you know, speaking of that sort of image, another post that is a sort of companion post to this is over at Vigilant Citizen, posted back in 2012, Sinister Sights IRS Headquarters, Maryland. The IRS headquarters in New Carrollton, Maryland, is a government building that, despite being constructed with public funds, contains art referring to elite secret societies. More importantly, the art conveys a strange message about the U.S. Constitution and the American people in general. We'll look at the symbolic meaning of the art found in front of the IRS headquarters in Maryland. And so just to finish that point from the article and excerpt, general layout, under the heading general layout, the entrance to the IRS headquarters is guarded by two black and white pillars made of the highest quality marble topped with white hands. Between the two pillars is a dark pyramid with a metallic capstone on which is written, "We the People." The caption of the image reads, "The art in front of the IRS," same thing. You know, the black and white stripes refer to the hermetic concept of duality. What does all of this represent? Here's an official description, official quote-unquote, from the 2005 Washington Post article. The most striking elements are the huge white marble hands atop each column. Each hand points skyward, one with the forefinger extended, the other is an open hand, the fingers ever so slightly cupped. The 1997 work is called Vox Populi, which is Latin for the voice of the people. The hand with the raised index finger represents deliberation, argument, the gesticulation of a speaker giving his or her opinion. The hand with an open palm represents the act of voting or taking an oath. And that's the Washington Post article, The Big Hands of the Law, 2005 article. You can read the rest of the article for more, but back to the slide presentation, world community assistance to the actions of legal government, how you prevent color revolutions, so-called. Intensification of international cooperation, forging relationships and reaching compromises, maybe ceding some sovereignty, as the Richard N. Hosses would say. If it is impossible, or Klaus Schwab's, the Bill Gates, the Yuval Noah Harari's, etc. If it is impossible to reach a consensus in a wide format of international security organizations, it is essential to search for an acceptable solution at a regional level. In other words, rinse and keep repeating until you can do this. And finally, slide 47 of 52, aims of aggression. And there are the two arrows pointing to the center, two, and this is another diagram. On the left, there's classical aggression. On the right, there's aggression in the form of color revolution, which points to aims of aggression, a list of four things. Aims of aggression, to change, and this is what it reads, to change of the political military leadership. Again, this is this Russians pretending to be bad at English, or is this, British intrigue pretending to be Russians pretending to be bad at English? Anyway, to change of the political-military leadership of the target country and to involve it into the intended sphere of influence, that's number one, aims of aggression. Two, to decrease its economic and military potential. Three, to impose the aggressor's military presence. Four, to gain access to the resources of the defeated country. And that points to a list of outcomes, five outcomes. Number one, never-ending civil war, terrorism. Number two, decreased status of the country in the region of the world. Number three, partial loss of control over the territory. Four, ruined economy, lost control over the economic resources. And five, 15 to 20-year kickback in the development of the country. Now, if you have been paying attention in America for any length of time, let's just say, going back to the WTO days, or, you know, coming forward from the, you know, September 11, 2001, let's just say from that point forward, if you've been paying attention, I believe you can find strong evidence laying all around of these forces at work here in America. And again, if we see a list, you know, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism. I don't know. Somebody said something. Somebody wrote something somewhere along the way to that effect. You have to wonder, is there a plan afoot? Yes, there is.
Along
yes,
with Virginia, several there thousand is conspiracy. Young men from prominent families just like him, all of whom returned with a PhD degree.
Yeah. John Taylor Gatto. We didn't play that, but we could have. The Paradox of Extended Childhood, Pan Syndrome, Neverland, and The Lord of the Flies. That's another discussion for another day. That'll do it. Please support the network. Have a great weekend. I hope it was informative and edifying. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.